Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your hosts for this weekend show. This weekend show where we will be starting off focusing on the precious metals sector, but not so much on gold. Focusing a little bit more on silver and platinum and palladium, as those have also started to get some life. Back end of the show, we're going technical, looking at broad markets as well as some other sectors that I think you all will be interested in. Just as a note, please remember to go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Through your podcast player and YouTube channel, just search The KE Report. Listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. And please subscribe and give us some comments within those platforms. It helps to get the word out on this show. And especially because it really is a raging bull market for precious metals and precious metals stocks. And that's where we've been focusing so much of our content recently on. We're kicking off this weekend show with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. I should note we are recording this about halfway through the day on Tuesday, so we don't have anywhere close to week-ending prices, but we do already have a lot to talk about in the precious metals sector. Gold, it's really not doing much over the last couple months, but even on Monday of this week, gold was down, and silver, that's not lagging anymore. Silver made a breakout above that $35 level. We also saw platinum and palladium also moving as gold corrected. So Jeff, give us the lay of the land here in terms of precious metals, and it seems like rotation of money down the food chain.
Yeah, I think Monday was a very interesting day for a lot of people because, as you said, you saw gold off $44 at one point, but silver, platinum, and palladium had risen. And it was interesting because copper had also fallen. So it wasn't like industrial metals and metals that get used in manufactured products were rising. Copper, which is the premier industrial metal, was off with gold. And I think part of it was what you just said. It's a rotation away from gold. I mean, and let's be honest, gold right now, Tuesday afternoon, $3,362. It has rarely been that high in history. It's off from $3,400, a little over $3,400 late last week, but it's still extremely high. And I think that's one of the things that you're seeing is people are shifting. Okay, gold's up, platinum, palladium, and silver had not been rising as strongly as gold. Platinum and palladium have been trapped in these ranges for years, $900 to $1,100 an ounce type ranges. And I guess there were some people who said, they have their due. You also have active contract months in NYMEX Platinum for July and COMEX Silver. And you have, large open interest in those two contracts. I think that was one of the factors. You've had some marketing hype in platinum and palladium over the last couple of weeks. You had Platinum Week in London. The platinum promotional organizations were talking about platinum being in this massive deficit and short supply, and that the auto industry was going to recover worldwide, and that Chinese platinum demand for use in jewelry had risen sharply. And, starting with the last one, Chinese jewelry demand rose. CPM Group's estimate was that it was up 32,000 ounces or so last year. But the World Platinum Investment Council, which promotes platinum to investors, had it at like 160,000 ounces, which is a lot, but it's not going to move the needle. So I think that it was a combination of factors. Investors sort of saying, okay, the Chinese demand and the deficit stories, auto may be recovering. It doesn't look like it, right now. The auto sales in the first quarter of this year in the United States was up very slightly. And that was with a sharp increase in March, where people were buying cars in anticipation that the prices would rise very sharply once tariffs came into effect. And even in China, You had only a small increase in the first 4 months of this year, and half of the cars in China now are electric vehicles and don't use platinum group metals. So, there's some cautionary tales there. We're not, we think it's a little bit more than a spike. The reality is that you have a lot of investors with a lot of money looking for places to park it. They're kind of nervous about having it in stocks and in bonds. There's a high degree of uncertainty and anxiety about the future course of the economy and the political system. And that, I think, is all coming together to push some of these metals up. How sustainable it is, we're not quite sure. Our view is that we probably will see strong silver and platinum prices at least in for the remainder of June, and we might see, prices come off. Now, platinum, as I said, platinum's traded in this range of like $850 to $900 on the low end, and $1,050 to $1,100 on the high end. It rose from like $1,000 at the beginning of this month to this morning. I think it traded as high as $1,232. So it's risen about $230 in 8 trading days, 7 trading days. That's very fast, and we wouldn't be surprised to see it come off. It has broken above that $1,100 cap that held in 2024 and 2025. But if you look at a longer term price chart, spikes up to 1,200 have not been unheard of in 2016, 2021, 2022, and they were all short-lived. So we're kind of cautious on platinum beyond July. Palladium, we're more cautious on because it's in a weaker position and its active contract month is September. But you did see palladium go from about $960 a month, an ounce earlier this month to, it traded as high as $1,093. So it's up about $150. We think it's pretty much technical buying and speculative buying. And then, as you said, silver. And silver has been very interesting because it was really trading in a very narrow range of like 32 to 35, 32 to 33, not 75 from really the middle of April into the beginning of June. And in the first trading days of June, it spiked up over 33, over 34. And then, Thursday of last week, it spiked over 35. It got as high as 36.97.50 today. So, 36.98, $36.98, virtually $37. You have a lot of open interest in the July contract. That seems to be the major factor that's going on here, is that you have the shorts rolling their July contracts into September.
Yeah, Jeff, let's maybe just vector in on silver even a little bit further there. To your point, it had been stuck in a channel there. Although it's interesting, it's kind of a three times a charm story with silver. It got to 35 very briefly in October of last year. It got there very briefly in March of this year on the futures contracts. And then now that it hit 35 for the third time starting last week, it has blasted up over that 35 resistance level that a lot of technicians were talking about. And now it's very close to 37. It actually tagged 37 yesterday on Monday, very briefly, 37.03. So it's interesting to see it breaking above that resistance level. But then out come the narratives, Jeff. We hear that it's because of solar demand, or it's because it's poor man's gold, or it's a catch-up trade, or it's because people are wishful thinking on the economy. What do you think's driving this recent fuel higher in silver?
Two things and two things alone. One is the roll of the July contract into September. And the second thing is investment demand. You have seen, it's interesting because you've seen a lot of weakness in silver coins and medallions and small bars. And you still have investors. I mean, last week when the price spiked higher, you had a lot of coin dealers saying they were seeing more selling back to them than buying from investors. Investors, some of these investors who had bought silver in 2011, 2012, or in 2021, early 2022, were taking advantage of the high prices to sell. But you saw very strong demand for silver in silver ETFs and in other silver products. So what we were looking at was, investors who are not those long-term investors in small physical silver investments, other investors were buying into silver, partly because the price is rising, partly because it has, quote, lagged gold, partly because of all the narratives, as you said. But the more traditional physical silver investors, the people who were buying coins and medallions, they actually have been taking the opportunity to sell some of their metal. Others are buying, but the coin dealers that we've talked to across the country have said they saw more selling by investors than buying by investors in terms of small physical items.
So, Jeff, any insights on the COT reports, though? How actual traders are positioned? You talk all the time about its investment demand that drives these prices. And silver, what's happened when it bounces up to $50 an ounce? It's usually on the back of a short squeeze. Is that the setup?
Well, first off, there's no such thing as a short squeeze. It's not a short squeeze. The shorts on COMEX are two things. And one of them is they are the reflection, the mirror image of the longs on COMEX. And you have seen long positions rising on COMEX. As I said, you're seeing buying on the ETFs and you're seeing buying on other derivative products like COMEX futures and options. And when an investor or when a group of investors say, ooh, we're getting bullish on silver, let's load up on futures, someone has to sell them those futures. Someone, by definition, has to go short. Those someones are the commercials, the brokers, and the banks. So insofar as you've seen some increase in the short position on the part of those, it is a reflection of an increase in the long position by investors. The second thing is that you have all of these banks and trading companies that own hundreds of millions of ounces of silver and lease it out to mining companies, smelters, refiners, and industrial users, and companies that use it as backing for silver investment products like notes, silver-backed notes, and other things. And those banks and trading companies are required by their financial sources to be fully hedged. And the primary place where they hedge is COMEX Silver Futures. So insofar as you've seen some increase in the demand for leasable silver on the part of mining companies, which are increasing their production this year, and fabricators, that is reflected then or mirrored in an increase in the shorts. Now, if you look at the COMEX commitment of traders, and we're going to look at, it comes out today for last week, and we've set aside time to look at it very closely. If you look at it, what you've seen is actually an increase in some shorts on the part of institutional investors, but the commercial shorts haven't actually risen all that sharply. So you've got really a situation where investors are moving into silver. They're not moving into the small products, but they're moving into ETFs. They're moving into futures. Some of them, most of them are going long futures because that's what institutions and other investors are most comfortable doing. But some of them are actually shorting silver because it has broken out of the range that it's been in for so long.
Well, Jeff, when you think about silver, people have been eyeing that 1980 and 2011 high at $49 to $50 for a long time. We've asked you about this before on the show, and you said it's within the realm of reason that it gets back up there, but pointed out the last two times it was a spike high up there and it didn't stay there. Is it reasonable for this year, as according to the CPM group, to maybe at least get into the 40s, though, and hang out in the 40s? Because that would be a big benefit to the silver stocks. Do you think $40 silver is reasonable in 2025?
Yeah, when you talk about silver prices and where they're going to go, there are two sets of silver prices that you're talking about. One is those spikes. How high could silver get on a spike? The other one is how high might silver get on a sustained basis, right? So in 1980, you saw the price spike up to $49 and some odd cents. And the next day it came off sharply, and within 3 months it was at $16 an ounce, and it stayed down for several decades, two and a half decades after that. The second spike was in 2011, and that was entirely the price had risen from $5.50 in 2005 to, $32 at the end of March 2011, based on rising investment demand, which was being fueled by all of the economic and political and financial problems that we had, the global financial crisis, the Great Recession, the international sovereign debt crisis in the Eurozone and Greece, and the downgrading of the U.S. Treasury credit rating. So you had a lot of problems that were causing investors to get in there, and silver had gotten up to $32. And at the beginning of April 2011, you had like 360, 370 million ounces of open interest in the active May contract. And if you look at what happened over the course of May, April into beginning of May, the price of silver went from $32 to $49.90, virtually $50 on a spike. And during that time, investors bought like very little silver in coin form. They actually bought about 2 million ounces of silver ETFs, but the shorts in the May contract bought 360 million ounces of silver futures and rolled them forward into July. And that's what drove that price from 32 to 49. Once that roll was over, which was the end of April, the price came off in 5 days to $32 an ounce. So that's your risk this time going into the July contract. Longer term, that's the spike issue. Longer term, sustainable prices, CPM Group has been projecting for some time that the price would be rising on a quarterly and possibly annual basis to record highs in this period. We've been saying for maybe 8 years or so that we thought that the price of silver could get over $30 on a sustained basis. The annual peak, the highest annual price was $35 back in like 2011 or 2012. So at $35 in the first 4 months of this year, we're pretty much close to that annual record price. Our expectation is the price will rise higher. We would not be surprised to see the price touching $40 in the final months of this year, but we think that in 2026, our expectation is that if the political and economic environment unfold the way we think that they will, that you will probably see silver prices on a sustained basis above $40. So we're looking at a more sustainable increase in silver prices over the next 18 months than the ones that we saw in 1980 and 2011. And let me add one thing. People tend to look at those spikes, but the spikes are almost meaningless to anybody except those few people who can catch a falling knife. What's really important to the mining company, to the investors in mining companies, and to long-term investors are the annual and quarterly average prices of silver. I'd much rather own silver that can go to $30 or $40 or $45 an ounce on a sustained basis than I would rather have gold or silver that can spike to $50 and 5 days later have coughed up 40% of that.
Yeah, we don't want to see that because that has really signified the end of some of the bull market moves. But with higher estimates, even into next year, begs the question then here, Jeff, because this bull market has played out really textbook. Gold ran higher. The majors started to move. Some of the mid-tiers and early-stage miners, gold-wise, those moved. And now gold, again, flat for about 3 months, but so much higher than any or other breakout levels that now the other precious metals are catching up. And now even the junior stocks are getting a buy. Where does that leave gold? Does gold have another substantial leg higher in your eyes later this year or next year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We look at the fundamentals of each of these markets, and the fundamentals of gold are pretty strong. You've got strong investment demand on a global basis. Central banks have pulled back mightily last year and in the first 4 months of this year in terms of the amount of gold that they have been buying. But they are clearly interested in buying, and they will support the price in any decline. In any price decline, you'll see central banks coming back and buying more gold. So the fundamentals of gold, which are primarily investment demand in central banks, in terms of their price-making influence or price-influencing power, are good for gold. And then you look at the economic and political environment, and I have a very pessimistic view right now. The outlook for the political, economic, and financial system over the next 18 months. You know, so I think that gold will come back. And I'll say this, if gold doesn't come back, it spells bearish outlook for everything else. You know, gold is that bellwether. It rises first. And when it falls, it's usually falling first, right? You know, it doesn't fall in a vacuum.
Well, Jeff, one other news blip that we keep hearing about, and I've had a lot of people email me and they wanted me to ask you about this, is the Basel III, you know, the tier one status that gold has for banks where they can now hold it on their balance sheet like dollars. Do you think that matters as far as another layer of banks that can participate in the buying of gold?
Well, there are two things there. First off, you know, gold's been tier one for Basel III for a while now, and it doesn't mandate that central bank, that banks, commercial banks, have to own gold. It simply says that if they own gold, they can value it at a higher percentage of its value than if it's not tier one. Central, you know, banks could always count gold as an asset, but they couldn't count it as a tier one asset because of gold's price volatility. So they always had to do a big shave on the value of their assets that were in gold. When gold was allowed in as a Basel III tier one asset, that allows them to use a higher percentage of the market value of their gold in counting their tier one assets. And what you saw was virtually no reaction. You know, banks have said, that's great. It's good to know. It's nice to have that increased cushion, but we're not going to run out and add to our gold positions based on that. If our clients mandate or ask us to do transactions which cause us to increase our gold holdings, great. But we're going to only increase our gold holdings if there's a commercial rationale, not because of Basel III. Now, there's a second issue which has nothing to do with Basel III, is the highly liquid asset rule, which comes into play for some banks in the beginning of July. That has nothing to do with Tier 1 Basel III, and it has nothing to do with gold. And I know there are a lot of gold promoters who are running around waving their arms saying, oh, this is going to cause these banks to have to or to want to increase their holdings, but it's actually completely meaningless to gold. It's a big yawn.
But they can carry it at the actual value now rather than being, I guess, at a discount. But yeah. Jeff, look, it sounds like so much of your focus is on what's coming up in the political front. Again, the continued maybe degradation of U.S. markets, or at least the interest of international investors in the U.S. What is on the horizon here? What sort of news are you expecting that just further plays out this narrative? And what could change it over, well, we're almost halfway through the year, over the rest of this year?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, again, there's a very high static to noise ratio going on here. So you hear about like Treasury vigilantes betting against the Treasury. We're going to have later this week a 30-year Treasury bond auction. And it's very big. And it's going to be meaningful because 30-year bonds are long. These are the longest maturity bond Treasury securities that are out there. And, you know, to give you an idea, as we were paying down the deficit and debt in the 90s, the U.S. Treasury actually stopped issuing 30-year bonds for a while, and the focus shifted to the 10-year Treasury notes. So you've got a 30-year bonds, and you've got, like, I think it's $22 billion they're going to auction. And the question is, do people want that much? Now, in Treasury auctions, they have a bid-to-cover ratio. So if you're offering $22 billion worth of notes, our bonds, our bills, the ratio has generally speaking been around 2.5 to or so of offers to buy those notes relative to the notes on offer. And it's interesting because you'll hear people say, well, no one's buying treasuries and no one's bidding for these treasuries, but the bid to cover ratio actually has risen over the last year or so. And it's higher than it's been for most of the period of time from, say, 2015 until about 2020. So the reality is that the data from the Treasury auctions does not suggest that people are running away from Treasuries. The data on the amount of Treasuries that are being bought by overseas investors does not suggest they're running away from Treasuries. You know, it's at record levels. It's more than $9 trillion held overseas in US Treasury securities right now. The bid to cover ratios, as I said, have been rising over the last 6 months or so, 12 months. So you actually have a situation where it's probably okay. It's going to be very interesting to see. I think there'll be a lot of dollar bears that will be very disappointed with what they see. You know, we were just doing some numbers on the US dollar. The trade-weighted dollar, the Federal Reserve Board nominal trade-weighted dollar, which is what we use, it was 121.5 on Friday, the 6th of June. That was off 6% from the beginning of the year. It was up 7% from the June 2021 low, and it was up 42% from the April 2011 low. So the dollar has fallen from its January peak. It's fallen all the way back to a low level that we have not seen since last September. And it's still higher than it was virtually any time prior to 2022. So the dollar's not showing signs that no one wants to hold the dollar. The dollar's not collapsing. The amount of gold, treasury of central bank foreign exchange held in dollars, it was about 59.2, which compares roughly to 59% in 1995 and 59.4% in 2022. And it's down from 2010, but 2010 was the midst of the sovereign debt crisis in other countries. So people were moving into dollars. So you don't see signs that people are dumping the dollar, and you don't see signs that they're dumping the treasury, which is good because our deficit's going to explode. Now, that's the current situation. The question I think you asked me was, what do we see going down the road? And we're looking at an enormous increase in annual deficits for the next 5 years. And we're looking at an enormous increase in US government debt. And we're looking at a world where the US government has alienated most other countries, as well as a lot of the people within the US, to the point where they may be less willing to hold dollars going forward. So there is a look around for and alternative assets to hold. But right now, the liquidity of the dollar relative to everything else and the relative attractiveness of US Treasury securities compared to sovereign debt issued by other central banks around the world are such that the dollar's holding up pretty well. It's going to be challenged. It's going to have a very challenging time because of government hostilities, in part precipitated by the United States government. Yeah, I was writing something about rare earths this morning, and I pointed out that, you know, the Chinese government and Chinese economy have had a stranglehold on rare earth supplies for years and decades, but they've never used it until April, after our government started talking about massive tariffs on Chinese exports. The Chinese government said, okay, fine, you don't need to take our rare earths. So There's a cheaper, easier way to fix the rare earth supply, which is to negotiate with countries on a fair basis, as opposed to saber rattling. It's a lot cheaper than pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into a defunct rare earth mine that should never be reopened because it's sub-economic and will always be sub-economic. But we have these problems, and they will probably be reflected in negative attitudes toward the dollar and treasuries and positive attitudes toward gold and silver.
All right, Jeff. Thank you very much for your insights. And look, sounds like we still have a fair bit of run room ahead of us into next year, still for this precious metals bull market. And you are right, that dollar still hanging around that 100 level on the dollar index, historically kind of elevated outside of some major spikes. If the world continues to, or even starts to, I guess, shift away from the US, well, who knows what kind of game we're in then. But hey, in the meantime, Jeff, I'm sure we'll follow up with you next month. Jeff, thank you for taking time with us on this weekend show. And everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back getting more of a technical look at the market.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.